pretty nifty.
Yeah, yeah, it should be good. I want to make sure you've got about an hour, you said, and that's going to work?
Yeah, and you know, the other, I'm driving, and so I don't know how long this is going to take. It could be longer or shorter, depending on the traffic, but if we need to, you know, schedule another thing out, yeah, is that all right?
That's absolutely fine. That totally works.
All right. So if we'll get in what we can, and if we need to do more, we'll go to that.
Yeah, that sounds good. I just want to make sure, you know, you received the pre-interview consent, and you understand, and then you are going to be recorded, so just make sure you know we are audio recording this.
Right, okay.
Okay, and then let me just go through the little preface here. Today is Tuesday, May 10th, 2011. This is Raquel Hutchinson at the University of Texas at Austin, and I'm interviewing Olympic swimmer John Kinsella over the phone today in order to record his experiences and reflections of the 1968 Olympic Games in Mexico City. And I'd like to start with learning a little bit about how you got into swimming to begin with when you started with the sport.
Actually, I learned to swim in Lake Michigan. My family and would go over to the Michigan side of Lake Michigan in the summer. And my great uncle Bud, I didn't know how to swim. And he said, "Do you know how a dog paddles?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, just pretend you're a dog and paddling." And the next thing I knew, I was swimming, and I was very excited. I ran in to tell my ran into the beach to tell my mother that I could swim, and that was a really big deal for me. But I got my start in terms of swimming instruction at the YMCA, at the local YMCA, and I started there around 9 years old, 8 or 9 years old, something like that, and taking swimming lessons. So that's where I kind of got some instruction. And then my parents belonged to, or my family belonged to, they had a swim coach, and my parents hired Dixon Kaiser to give me swim lessons. And I must have been about 9 years old when he was giving me these lessons, and he told me that he thought I had the, I had the potential to make the Olympic team. Now, I literally didn't know what the Olympics were at that stage, because it was before the 1964 Olympics, which got a lot of publicity with Don Schollander, who was a swimming idol of mine. Okay. And so he told me, but the way he said it, I could tell that that was very complimentary. And so I took it as a compliment, and he turned out to be right.
Good. And
subsequently, I got hooked up with the local, what was called the AAU, the Amateur Athletic Union.
Mm-hmm.
And I got on a local team there and started swimming, and and not just in swim instruction, but also in swimming workouts, and that led to the high school swimming and college and Olympic swimming and the rest. So that was I was very lucky to have really good instructors and coaches pretty much from the get go throughout my entire swimming career.
And you swam in college, is that right?
I swam at Indiana University under James Doc Councilman, and we won 3 NCAA titles, team titles, and so yeah, I swam in college as well as high school. We won the state, Illinois State High School Championship all 4 of my years in high school.
Wow.
So I had a lot of great teammates and great coaches and great experiences.
Great. And the 68 Olympics were the first Olympics you went to, right?
Correct.
And what do you, I guess when you first kind of got to Mexico City, what were sort of your impressions, or how did you feel about the accommodations?
Well, yeah, I had swum in what was called the pre-Olympics in Mexico City the year before, and I had I had those accommodations, and so I was a kid, and they were fine by me. I mean, I didn't, they were kind of dormitory style, and but I wasn't used to living in the lap of luxury anyway, and certainly they were fine by me. But it was also good that we all, we had an Olympic Village where we were all together, and I got a chance to meet people from, all various parts of the world, and you could trade pins and have that experience. So it was a great experience as a young kid to be able to have that.
And I guess while you said you were able to meet other people from all parts of the world, did you, was there anyone in particular that you met or any interaction with any athletes from other countries that really stood out to you or that you remember now?
I just remember the Australians being kind of crazy, and, but it was a lot of fun. Yeah, I mean, it was just, met some different coaches. The other thing about the Olympics that I remember is, every other year they alternate. So in '68, swimming was the last, track and field was first, and then swimming was second. In Munich, it was reversed. Swimming was first, and track and field was second.
Okay.
Well, in '68, I was, 16. I was youngest, youngest man on the team, and actually up until the 2004 Olympics, I was the youngest male medalist at any Olympics ever. I thought that was kind of fun. My son found that on the internet.
Yeah.
And I'm still the youngest United States male medalist ever. But in any event, it made it a little tougher because I had to kind of keep my nose to the grindstone. I had to be, I was mindful of the fact that I still had my competition, which, I wanted to do well in, and I was focused on, and I was nervous about. So, plus I was only 16. So I was, I was having fun, but I mean, I wasn't, certainly I wasn't out partying or, doing it. I was keeping my nose to the grindstone because I knew I had a race to win. And not to win, but to compete in. And the other thing was I trained at altitude. Mexico City, as I'm sure you all know, was at altitude of 7,000 or 6,700 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent the summer, that summer of 68 at the Air Force Academy, which is the same altitude as Mexico City, because it's just training at that altitude to acclimate. So I'd been away from home for like 5 months by the end of it. I was getting a little homesick.
Yeah, I can imagine. How was the high altitude training? Was it anything different than what you were used to, or I mean, any kind of anything unusual at the Air Force Academy, or kind of just the same?
Well, it was pretty grueling, and certainly, you got more tired. You got more tired because of the altitude. So mm-hmm. that was part of it. The other part of it, I was basically pretty much training on my own. I had another swimmer there at the Air Force Academy I did some sessions with, but because it wasn't a training camp or I wasn't with my my high school team, I was pretty much on my own. So it was kind of like the loneliness of a long distance runner. I was kind of lonely.
Yeah. And do you think that the high altitude training helped prepare you for Mexico City for the conditions there?
I think it did. What we hadn't counted on was that a week before my race, I was going to get Montezuma's revenge and, had some sickness and stomach issues, and that kind of weakened me. But I was swimming very well up until about a week ahead of my race, and then I got sick, and, it was a little bit touch and go, but I managed, I obviously ended up being.
Yes. And so since you were the youngest on the team, like you said, how did that affect, I guess, your relationship with the rest of your teammates, the other male swimmers? Did you feel particularly close to anyone, or were you still, like you said, sort of on your own?
Well, I had, the year before, my coach at Hinsdale, Don Watson, had the foresight to send me out to Santa Clara for the summer. Santa Clara at that time was kind of the swimming mecca.
Mm-hmm.
It had, like, Mark Smith and Don Showalter and Greg Buckingham and Mike Wall and a number of swimmers that I, both male and female, that I later ended up being teammates of on the 68 team. I think Santa Clara had the biggest representation on the 68 team of any team. So it was good for me because I knew those people. You know, maybe I wasn't best friends with them, but I knew them. So that really helped me feel, I think, more part of the team than I would have otherwise. And one of the guys that I kind of forged a bond with during that summer of 67 was Don Showalter, because he was kind of the reigning, you know, king of swimming. He won 4 gold medals in Tokyo in 64. So even though he was like 5-6 years older than I was, he and I had hit it off, and that was, that was good because I was, I was friends with him. So I think as a result of that, I was much more accepted than I may, than I would have been other, there was 4 other high school students, high school swimmers, men high school swimmers on the team. I think I was, more accepted, although, everyone, I think the people had a respect for, all of us because we had, proven our merit by making the team.
Right. Let's see. Well, I know, in the Mexico City Olympics, there was obviously the kind of the infamous Black Power salute. Do you recall kind of at the time when you heard about it, or what your impression of at the time, kind of what it meant to you, if anything?
Well, I wasn't at the stadium, but I do remember that, and I really was, at that time I wasn't sure what it was all, about, other than obviously they had some beef with what was going on. So I remember it was a big to-do, but it was something that was kind of remote from my experience. Mm-hmm. I was blessed and certainly glad appreciative of the fact that I had made the team, because that was certainly not a not a given, or not a a foregone conclusion. So even though I felt I had a good chance to make it, it was the proof is in the pudding. So I was pretty, I was pretty focused on what I had to do, and I was not letting much of anything really, impact. I was kind of keeping within myself because, it was just really important for me to do well, and I didn't want to get distracted or get too, I was kind of, I was very self-focused, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Did you go to any of the other events? Did you attend any events, or kind of just keep in the Olympic Village, sort of?
Yeah, I'm trying to think now that you're saying that. I kept a lot of the Village. I did go, no, that was Munich. See, I'm thinking of Munich now. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go to any track and field. I think there were some tickets we got to kind of, I'll say, not as popular sports, maybe volleyball or something. So I think I took in a handful of events, but not a bunch. Like I say, I was, I kind of had a one-track mind, if you will.
And so I don't know. Did you meet? This was also during the Cold War, and did you have any interaction with athletes from the Soviet Union at all, or kind of, again, removed from that as well?
Well, there was a central meeting place, and so, there were you know, there were Russians there, and I'd met some Russians the year before at the pre-Olympics, and so we ran into each other. It wasn't like we were bosom buddies or, you know, best friends or anything, but certainly we intermingled, so, you know, commingled for sure.
Right. Okay. And then this was also the first year that they tested for performance enhancing drugs or substances. Did you have, I guess you would have had experience with that, right? Since you won a medal?
Well, yeah, I had a peanut cup. That was my experience.
That's it?
That's pretty much it. I mean, I mean, presumably I tested negative because nothing happened, you know? So, I mean, I wasn't on any drugs, obviously, but, but yeah, I do remember,
didn't seem like a big deal to you then?
Say again?
Oh, I'm sorry, I said it didn't seem like a big deal to you then?
Well, I don't know if I was aware at the time that it was the first time, maybe I was, I don't recall that, but, it wasn't that big a deal, A, because I knew I hadn't taken any drugs, and so I wasn't, like, nervous about anything, and B, just being in a cup was, it was painless and harmless and quick and easy, and that took care of that. So it was just something that you kind of, or I kind of accepted as having to do it, and beyond that, not really thinking much about it.
Okay. Did you have any, I guess, did you take, have any time to sort of maybe do any exploring within, like, Mexico City, you know, just because it was in a different country, and in any of your time there, either before your events or while you were there for the pre-Olympics, anything that you maybe saw within, like, in Mexico City that maybe impacted sort of your overall experience at the Olympics?
Well, yeah, there was this one church that, there was a big promenade or walkway leading up to it, and people, as part of their religious beliefs or religious ceremony, would walk on their hands and knees all the way up. I forget how long it was, but it was quite a journey, especially on your hands and knees. So,
yeah.
So I saw some things like that. That was certainly different than anything that I had been exposed to where I grew up. Just in terms of people's beliefs. The other thing that happened, speaking of tickets, you had mentioned before about other events. I realized that you could scalp tickets, and I always like money, so I got a bunch of tickets that we had either gotten as athletes or some parents had gotten, however they gotten, to scalp them because we didn't want to use them. Well, what happened there was I was down in the area where this was going on, and the police came up and arrested me and my buddy and basically just took our tickets. And, you know, we heard later that they had, sold our tickets. So basically they just stole our tickets.
Right.
So that was another thing that was, you know, another occurrence or happenstance or experience that first of all, that we had these tickets to sell, and second of all, that the cops took them from us and supposedly arrested us. I mean, they didn't, we didn't spend any time in jail or anything, but basically they just took our tickets. So there was, I got some exposure at a young age to corruption, and, and then there was, before we even arrived in Mexico City, there were stories about the riots and the protests and, people getting hurt or killed. I think some people got killed before the Olympics protesting. And, so we were I was aware of some of that turmoil that, again, wasn't really part of my experience. So I got some exposure to things at a young age that otherwise I wouldn't have gotten if I hadn't gone to the Olympics.
Right. Did you see any of the protesting, or were you, like, did you get any sense that was going on while you were there, or was it more that you knew about it before you got there?
Well, that was an example of something that happened before we got there, or we heard about before we got there, and I if it happened while they were there, I never saw anything. I think by then it had basically died down or been stamped out of, you know, in other words, it had run its course. That's my understanding. If there was something going on protest-wise during the Olympics, I'm not aware of it even to this day.
Okay. And then when you returned home after the Olympics, any sort of special reception? You just go straight back to school and training? Take any time off? How was that for you?
Yeah, I took some time off, and the Olympics that year were very late. They were I didn't swim till I think it was October 25th. I could be a day off on that, but so basically. Like now, the Summer Olympics are in the summer, so I missed the first quarter of school. I missed the first 9 weeks of school,
mm-hmm.
or quarter, whatever. So when I got back, and I had my teachers had given me, you know, assignments and this and that. Of course, none of which I did. Right. So when I got back, it was really hustling or really focusing or trying to catch up on. You know, everything that I had missed school-wise, academically, and so I my coach gave me a break to do that and make that a priority, and then the village I grew up in, which is Oak Brook, they organized a parade for me and gave me the key to the village, which I still have, and presented it to me. And then there was a thing at the local community center with my high school classmates, and my high school my class gave me a silver box engraved with Mexico City on it, and which was very nice, and I still have. I keep my medal in there, and so yeah, I got. And then I was also introduced at the football game, and they had a class assembly for me, so I got a lot of attention, which was which was nice, but it was also what I wasn't used to, or what I wasn't liking was some people were treating me different, like I was somehow different, even though so I felt like I was the same kid, but that the impressions had changed. People's impressions of me had changed because of this, my participation in the games and my, winning the silver medal.
Right. And then obviously you continued training and you went to the Munich Olympics. I'd like to ask a little bit about just kind of if you want to compare the experiences at all or anything that really stood out as unique or different, kind of how the two experiences kind of compare for you.
Well, I was a lot more mature. I'd been around the block by then. I was, and swimming was first, like I say. So after swimming was out of the way, we had time there to go to sporting events. We took in volleyball. We took in some track and field. It was much more. It was a more full experience for me because. A, I was older, but B, I was also, swimming was done, in the first half of the games, and then I had decided with some friends to take a semester off of school and travel around Europe and North Africa after the game. So, we were after that, we were done swimming, we bought a car, we took a trip. I can talk about that for a long time, but the point is we were all having fun, and so that was a big difference. I didn't, in Mexico, like I say, I was swimming on the last day of competition, the day before the closing ceremonies. I was really focused on, not letting any distractions get to me, and kind of, I was in my own cocoon. So that was kind of night and day. And then, of course, being 4 years older made a big difference too.
Yeah, yeah. Any particular memories from Mexico City that haven't come up that were important to you or that you still remember to this day?
Let me think for a second. Well, I I remember the opening ceremonies. It was a bright sunny day, and there's still a picture which was published in the 68 Olympic book, a commemorative book, that you can tell who I am, you can see where I was, so that was very, it was very memorable to march in the opening parade, my parents were there and, cheering me on, and that was great. I know the Detroit Tigers, I think it was Denny McClain, was pitching in the World Series. That was going on back home, and so I kind of have, bits and pieces like that of memories, and the water. I remember, the food and the water. You had to be careful drinking the water because of Montezuma's Revenge. And however I got sick, whether it was the food or the water, I don't know. But you're trying to be careful. But it was, there was always that worry about, getting sick. And so that kind of that manifested itself. So things like that, and then really. More of my teammates. Like I say, Don Scholander and the high school guys I was on, other guys in high school, like Larry Barbier, Jack Horsley, and Gary Hall, those three guys I went to college with later on, but, I got to know them then, and so the people really stand out. My fellow swimming teammates stand out the most, because those were the other thing that was unusual about 68, compared to Munich or compared to these days, I think, was because it was at altitude, they had a training camp at Air Force. After I made the team, the team went back to the Air Force, at least for me it was going back, the other guys hadn't been there, but we went back to the Air Force Academy to train at altitude. So we spent 6 weeks at the Air Force Academy. Now, this time, obviously, I'm training in the same pool, but, I'm with the Olympic team, so I'm training with my teammates, and so we got to know each other even better because we had all that time together prior to even going to the Olympics. So that made a big impression on me. And then during that training camp, we went up to some of us, a group of maybe a handful or two of us went up to from 6,700 feet to like 9,500 feet to train at the swimming pool at, kind of super high altitude. So I remember that. So experiences like that, but really, the camaraderie and the time we spent together playing cards and goofing around and everything, that's what sticks out to me, the most to me all these years later.
Yeah, of course. What advice would you give to an Olympic hopeful today?
Well, I think the best, I like talking to, when I'm asked to talk to kids, like high school kids or even younger kids, but I always, accept that offer because I like talking to kids. But what I tell them is, I tell the goalpost, which is, you have no, your coaches, your parents don't know how good you can be. Your coaches don't know how good you can be, Even you don't know how good you can be. So, don't limit yourself. Create, the thoughts in your mind that you want to achieve and, go over those with a passion and just focus on those. I used to think about, when I was swimming, I'd be, I'd be in a pool, but the stands were empty, but the stands were filled with screaming people, and I was in a race, and I was, swimming the race and imagining every detail of the race and how I was feeling and where I, how I was doing and what was going on and, everything. So create those thoughts and the rest will follow. You gotta know what you want. That's your responsibility in life, and then the universe manifests that. So, it's real important to create thoughts of what you want, and that's what I'd encourage you to do, because you can be, you can achieve things you have no idea or clue you're capable of. and it just starts with a thought.
And you said you are sometimes asked to speak to kids. Is this as an Olympic athlete, as a swimmer?
I'm more popular around the 2008, 2004, 2012. You know, people get the Olympic fever, and other times, not just that, but there are, I'm occasionally asked to speak to swim clubs or groups of, oftentimes around the Olympics.
Yeah. Are you still involved in swimming now?
I do some master swimming, and I got back into that about 3 years ago because my college team was having a reunion, and I used that as kind of an impetus to get back into it. I swim more in the summer because I like swimming outdoors. I don't like the chlorine, and the indoors is just more concentrated.
Yeah.
So I swim more in the outdoors. It's 50 meters, which is like the Olympic pool length, as opposed to 25 yards, which is like the high school and college pool length. So I like the longer pool, the outdoors, and but there's still a bunch of good, people. I mean, fun, good people. I thought swimmers are generally pretty, they've accomplished things because, not by accident, because they have the drive and discipline to, at one point in their life at least, to go up and down the pool back and forth and watch flying for 3 or 4 hours a day. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess I'd ask you kind of, what does the preservation of this, of the 1968 team, this legacy mean to you?
Well, I'm flattered that it's happening. I think, Tom Lowe and others have done a great job of raising awareness and, if somebody listening to this at some point gets something from it, I'm gratified by that thought. So I think it's a very interesting project, and I these days with what they have for storage devices, as I'm no technical expert, but you can put things down that'll last for thousands of years, which couldn't do in our day. So, I think it's something that now kids take for granted that we didn't, certainly growing up in those days in the 60s, that was even a possibility or even a thought that we even had, that was possible.
Right. Okay. Well, I think unless there's anything else that you think is important to share, or that you've anything that's come to you, or that we've forgotten to talk about, that you'd like to tell us, I think we've covered all of our topics. So unless you have anything else.
Well, I think the closing thought I would have is that, the Olympics are great. Not just people think of the Olympics like you're an Olympic athlete and somehow you're different. Again, going back to talking to kids, I always say, I only did what Michael Jordan or what I did or what any great athlete does. It does the same thing that you can do. You can do the same thing as any great athlete, which is set a personal best, And so to me, and swimming is great, and one reason it's great, in my opinion, is you've got a stopwatch there. You've got a clock there that, you can judge when you've done best, you've got a personal best. So just a matter of putting together success at personal best. So I don't look at the Olympic, certainly the times are going now are a lot faster than when I went, but so the value for me of the Olympics is not in the medal or the time or whatnot, and that's all well and good and fine, and I'm grateful for that, but I think the great thing about the Olympics is that it's peaceful endeavor, and it's doing your best, giving it your best shot, but having the sportsmanship and the camaraderie and the friendship and the lasting bonds you get from that, and I think the 68 team shows that in spades. So I'm very grateful and honored to be a part of of a wonderful team and a wonderful group of people. So that's what it means to me.
Great, great. Well, thank you very much for your time.
We can arrange it, and just to appreciate your sandwiching it in here for me. It made it convenient. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We will eventually transcribe this, and we will get a copy to you to review before we go any further. That might take a bit of time, just the actual process, but if you do have any questions before you get that, you can contact either, you have my information, or anyone at the Stark Center should be able to help you, but it will come to you eventually.
Oh, beautiful. Well, it was a pleasure talking with you, Raquel, and good luck with your project.
Great. Thank you very much. Have a good night.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Thanks.